And rounding off the panel, I'll have the honor of introducing Professor John Mearsheimer, the R. Wendell Harrison Distinguished Service Professor and Co-Director of the Program on International Security Policy at the University of Chicago. Professor Mearsheimer is the author of Liddell Hart and the Way of History, The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, and co-author with Stephen Wald of the Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, which in 2007 broke new ground in opening a discussion of what has long been one of America's most taboo subjects. This morning we're asking him to apply his cold reasoning of aggressive realism to examine whether adhering to Israel's policy of strategic ambiguity makes strategic sense to the United States, if the era of Israel's nuclear policy opacity is coming to an end, and whether Israel's possession of nuclear weapons has ever been beneficial for the United States.
I'd like to thank Grant for inviting me and all of you for coming out here to listen to me talk. He asked me to put on my strategist hat and talk about the whole subject of Israeli nuclear weapons more from the point of view of military strategy or international relations theory, and not so much in terms of the Israel lobby, which I, of course, have written about with Steve Wald. What I want to do is ask four questions and then answer them. First is, why did Israel develop nuclear weapons to begin with in the 1950s and 1960s? Second, does it make sense today for Israel to have a nuclear deterrent? Third, does opacity make good strategic sense for Israel? Does it matter for the United States? And then fourth, is it in America's interest for Israel to have nuclear weapons? Well, those are the four questions I want to answer. And you want to remember, when I answer those first two questions about why Israel developed nuclear weapons, I'm going to approach it from Israel's point of view. It's become clearer as I go along, but Israel and the United States are separate countries. And sometimes what's good for Israel is not good for the United States. On the question of Israel and nuclear weapons, let me start with a general point. The reason that states want nuclear weapons in almost all cases is because they are the ultimate deterrent. They make it almost impossible for an adversary or an opponent to attack your homeland and threaten the survival of your state. The obvious reason that if you have nuclear weapons and your survival is at risk, that's one clear circumstance under which you're likely to use those nuclear weapons. Many people now argue, here in Washington especially, that nuclear weapons have offensive capability, and if Iran were to get nuclear weapons, it could use those weapons to dominate the Gulf and establish hegemony in the region. This is not a serious argument, and of course there are not many serious arguments that take place about Iran here inside the Beltway, as you well know, but the idea that they're going to use nuclear weapons to dominate the Gulf, it's a laugher. It's also important to understand that even if you have nuclear weapons, it doesn't mean that other countries won't attack you. Again, I'm arguing that if you have nuclear weapons, they won't attack your homeland and threaten your survival. But you want to remember that in 1973, even though Israel had nuclear weapons, and the Syrians and the Egyptians understood that Israel had nuclear weapons, those two Arab states did initiate the famous October War or Yom Kippur War. So nuclear deterrence has its limits. Now, I think a powerful case can be made that it made good strategic sense for Israel to acquire nuclear weapons in the 1950s and the 1960s. One, because of the strategic environment that they operated in, and two, for historical reasons. With regard to the strategic environment, at that point in time, and again, we're talking about the 50s and the early 60s when this program was set in motion, Israel's conventional forces relative to its neighbors was nowhere, they were nowhere near as powerful as they now are. The gap between Israeli conventional forces and the neighbors' conventional forces was significant then, but nowhere near as great as it is today. At the same time, both Egypt and Syria, for much of that period, had very close relations with the Soviet Union, which was supplying them with arms. And as most of you know, the special relationship between the United States and Israel did not get going until 1967. And I would argue it was really not until after the 1973 war that the special relationship really began to take off. So relations between the United States and Israel were not very close at the time. The Soviet Union was a key player in the region, and Egypt and Syria, who were seen as client states of the Soviet Union, were quite formidable adversaries. I don't want to overstate the case. But nevertheless, given that strategic environment, and given the history of the Jews, especially in Europe, especially given the fact that the Holocaust was recent history at the time, you can understand full well why the Israelis wanted to acquire a nuclear weapon. Had I been a national security advisor to David Ben-Gurion, I would have pushed him down the nuclear road back in the 50s and the 60s. The question, though, and Sasha raised this, is whether it makes sense today for Israel to have a nuclear deterrent. I think it's obvious that if Iran were to acquire nuclear weapons, it would make little sense for Israel to give up its nuclear deterrent. And in fact, you'd never get the Israelis to do that. But that's not the interesting question. The interesting question is, what should Israel do if Iran abandons its nuclear enrichment capability and agrees to a comprehensive inspections regime? Would it then make sense for Israel to give up its nuclear arsenal? I think the answer to that question is not open and shut, but I think on balance, a powerful case could be made, or can be made, that Israel would be better off abandoning its nuclear deterrent. Now, why do I say that? Well, the argument for not giving it up is that they now have the ultimate deterrent. As you know, all states in the international system worry somewhat about their survival. The Israelis worry about their survival probably more than any other state in the system, for good reasons and bad reasons. But nevertheless, they worry. And given that they worry and that they have the ultimate deterrent, a powerful case can be made they should give it up or not give it up. But I think there are more powerful arguments on the other side. First of all, there's a fundamentally different strategic environment in place today than existed in the 50s and in the 60s. And it's much more favorable from Israel's point of view. The Soviet Union, as we all know, has gone away, and it is not supplying either Egypt or Syria or anybody in the neighborhood with a meaningful conventional fighting force. Furthermore, Egypt has changed its approach to dealing with Israel and is now effectively a relatively friendly state. It's not an adversary of Israel like it was in the late 1950s and throughout the 1960s as well. And if you look at what's happened with regard to the special relationship, it's blossomed since 1973, and the United States and Israel today are basically joined at the hip. That wasn't the case back then. And related to that, the United States has supplied Israel with the most up-to-date conventional weaponry in its arsenal. And as a result of that fact, combined with the fact that the Soviets are no longer supplying the Egyptians and Syrians, the gap between the Israelis on one hand and the Arab states on the other, in terms of conventional weaponry, is just enormous. Right? No state in its right mind would pick a fight with the Israelis. And every time it looks like the Syrians and the Israelis might get into a fight, the Syrians are backtracking like the best cornerback or safety in the NFL. it's really quite amazing. Nobody in their right mind would pick a fight with the IDF in that neck of the woods. So I think in terms of the strategic environment, conventional deterrence alone takes care of the Israelis. The other important reason for thinking about getting rid of Israeli nuclear weapons is to discourage or prevent proliferation in the region. I think the Israelis understand full well that there is significant pressure on Iran. There will eventually be significant pressure in Iraq again once we get out of there, and especially if Iran develops nuclear weapons of its own, to get nuclear weapons. You can posit plausible scenarios as to how nuclear proliferation occurs in the Middle East over the next 50 years. And I think it's clearly not in Israel's interest to have nuclear proliferation. I think given Israel's conventional superiority, number one, number two, given its close relationship with the United States, it's not likely to change anytime soon. And given the dangers associated with proliferation, I think the Israelis would be better off in a nuclear-free Middle East. But of course, that's not going to happen because the Israeli government is so far to the right and dominated by hardliners to the point where that's virtually unthinkable in the near future. But nevertheless, I think a good case could be made for pursuing that policy. This brings me to the third question, the matter of opacity. Does opacity make sense for Israel? And to a lesser extent, what are the consequences for the United States? Just let me say what I think we mean when we talk about opacity. This is where a country has nuclear weapons, but it doesn't admit explicitly that it has those weapons, and it even hints that it might not have them. And of course, this is what the Israelis have been doing for decades now. My first question about opacity is, who are you fooling? Very important question. Who's being fooled here? It seems quite clear to me that the elites in the Arab world, the elites in Europe, and the elites in the United States, and by elites I mean policymakers, experts, and even the informed public, people who pay attention to this when they go home at night and read the newspaper and read books and magazines, none of them are being fooled. We all kind of figured out a long time ago that Israel has nuclear weapons. And I've never talked to any intelligent person who pays careful attention to Middle East politics who tried to pretend to me that Israel doesn't have nuclear weapons. Indeed, we all talk as if Israel had nuclear weapons. And in fact, if you think about it, the Israelis, because they acquired those nuclear weapons for deterrence purposes, want policymakers in the Arab world and want the Americans and wanted the Soviets during the Cold War to know that they had nuclear weapons. And in fact, I think they wanted them to be quite certain they had them and to let them know that they would use them, because that's what makes deterrence work. So I don't think you were fooling the experts. Now, one might argue that one of the advantages of this is just to create a little ambiguity in the minds of elites. And then in a crisis, you drag out the weapons and make it clear you would use them. One could argue that this is what happened in the 1973 war. But that's not a very smart strategy, because if you're the Israelis, you want to avoid crises. You want to avoid the 1973 war. So you want to make it pretty clear, if not very clear, to the elites that you have these things. And they've done that. So again, the question is, who are they fooling? Now, one might argue that this policy is good for allowing the elites in the Arab and Islamic world, especially in countries like Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia, to resist pressure from the public. Because when people down below begin to holler about the fact that Israel has nuclear weapons, the elites can say it's not clear that they have nuclear weapons. So what this policy of opacity provides is plausible deniability. I guess you can make that argument. It was probably somewhat effective in the past, but I don't think it's very effective now, in large part because of the internet. I'm a big believer that the internet has been a game changer. And if you rely on the mainstream media and mainstream publications for your information, you're not going to learn very much about Middle East politics, especially when it comes to Israel. But we have all of these websites and blogs, and we have the Israeli press and so forth and so on. We can just learn all sorts of things about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and Middle East politics more generally that you can't learn in the mainstream media here in the United States. And the end result of this is, I think, the cat is out of the bag on this one, and everybody kind of understands it. So the Israelis can pretend, and we can pretend, that it doesn't matter. I mean that Israel doesn't have nuclear weapons, but I don't think it buys you very much. Now, to pick up on Grant's comments, he indicated that it may help in the United States because it allows policymakers in Washington to pretend that Israel doesn't have nuclear weapons. And he was complaining about the fact that its policy of opacity undermines accountability. I don't think so. I don't think it matters much at all, because there's no accountability for Israel on any issue. They don't need opacity. Listen, if I went to the Middle East and visited Israel, and I was killed, somebody shot me there, do you think there'd be any accountability? Seriously. If any of you went to the Middle East and were killed, do you think there'd be accountability? There wouldn't be. This is how outrageous this situation is. Just think about the Liberty. Think about Rachel Corrie. Think about this Turkish American who was just killed in the flotilla. There's no accountability. Israelis can do almost anything and get away with it. So the idea that opacity matters, I don't think so. The lobby basically believes it can finesse any issue. They've never seen an issue that they can't finesse. Look at what they did with the Goldstone report. Judge Goldstone, right? I followed this issue very carefully. And he asked me to put my strategist hat on. As many of you know, I went to West Point, I was in the military for 10 years, and I cut my teeth in this business by doing military matters. The first time I ever went to Israel was to study what happened in the 67, 73, and actually the 56 wars. And I could tell you in great detail how those wars were fought. And I followed what happened in Gaza in 2008, 2009. Judge Goldstone, if anything, was too soft on the Israelis. Anybody who followed this carefully knows that he basically got the story right, and again, to the extent it was wrong, he should have been tougher on the Israelis. But you saw what happened to Judge Goldstone. This is how powerful the lobby is. Alan Dershowitz was correct, right, when he said that Jews of my generation created what is perhaps the most powerful interest group in the history of democracy. Remarkably powerful in this group. So I think you don't want to put too much emphasis on opacity. It matters on the margins, or it mattered once on the margins, but not very much. This brings me to the final subject. Is it in Israel's interest for Israel to have nuclear weapons? Now, it's very important to understand that Israel's supporters in the United States go to enormous lengths to make the argument that there's no difference between Israel's interests and America's interests. Because once you open the possibility that the two countries have different interests, then they're forced to choose in a very public fashion. And of course, they'll invariably choose Israel's interests over America's interests. And that is not something that they want to have happen in public. Right? And this is why they've gone to great lengths to create this situation where it looks like Obama and Netanyahu have patched up all their differences, and to the extent that there are differences, they'll be handled behind closed doors. Because they don't want those differences out in the open. But of course, as we all know, no two countries have the same interests. This has nothing to do with Israel or the United States. It's just the way international politics works. There are going to be cases where it's in Israel's interest to do certain things and not in America's interest to allow Israel to do those things. And there is no issue, I believe, where that is clearer than the nuclear issue. As I made clear in my opening set of remarks, I do believe it was in Israel's interest to develop nuclear weapons. By the way, I think it's in Iran's interest today to develop nuclear weapons. If I was President Ahmadinejad's national security advisor and he asked me what to do, I would tell him to acquire a nuclear deterrent. Is that in America's interest? Absolutely not. Iran and the United States have different interests. No two states have the same interests. I believe it was in Israel's interest to acquire nuclear weapons, and I'm hardly surprised that all the activities that the Israelis engaged in that Grant so eloquently described. That's the way states behave in the international system, and they go to great lengths to disguise their behavior. Okay, but it was not then in America's interest for Israel to acquire nuclear weapons, and it is not in our interest now for Israel to have nuclear weapons. This is why, as Grant described, President Kennedy went to great lengths to prevent Israel from acquiring nuclear weapons and to get them to join the NPT. And President Johnson, very, very interesting figure on this whole subject of U.S.-Israeli relations. President Johnson may have been willing to give Israel a green light or an orange light, however you want to characterize it. But you can see from Grant's comments and from reading the literature on this that down below, all sorts of people were protesting and all sorts of people in the national security establishment wanted to go to great lengths to stop Israel from acquiring nuclear weapons. Because again, it wasn't in our interest. And the two best examples that show how it's not in our interest is what happened during the 1973 war. During that conflict, you all remember, the Israelis looked like they were in dire straits in the first few days. And they wanted the United States to immediately resupply them. The Nixon administration said no, because the Nixon administration judged quite correctly that once the Israelis recovered from the initial surprise, they would do very well. And therefore, the U.S. government did not want to give the Israelis at that point more arms. The Israelis then threatened to pull the nuclear weapons out and began talking about using nuclear weapons. That, not surprisingly, spooked the Americans, who immediately began resupplying the Israelis, even though they did not want to do that. That's a form of nuclear coercion. From Israel's point of view, it was a smart policy. From our point of view, it was not good. And then the second example is what's recently been going on with regard to nuclear proliferation. It's quite clear, and you see this from the recent review conference, that the fact that Israel has nuclear weapons, and again, we're not fooling anybody with this opaque rhetoric, the fact that Israel has nuclear weapons is making it very difficult for the United States to stem the tide on proliferation and to move to a nuclear-free Middle East. So again, it's just not in our interest, and it would have been much better if we could, from our point of view, if we could have prevented Israel from acquiring nuclear weapons. Let me just conclude with a few words on where this situation is headed. I actually believe that the situation is going to get much worse over time. I believe that we are not going to have an Israeli-Palestinian peace settlement. I believe that talk of a two-state solution and all this talk about moving from proximity talks to direct talks is a charade. I find it hard to believe that people in this town take this discussion seriously at this point in time. You're going to get a greater Israel, and it either is or is going to be an apartheid state. It is going to cause us enormous problems in the Middle East or in the Arab and Islamic world. And it's going to continue to keep relations between Israel and its neighbors in a troublesome state. On the proliferation front, I would not be surprised if Iran and other countries continue to move down the nuclear road. You already see the Jordanians expressing interest in developing a significant nuclear enrichment capability. It'd be interesting to see what Turkey does. As I said to you before, I believe that Iraq will want nuclear weapons if Iran has nuclear weapons. They'd be foolish not to from an Iraqi point of view. And a Middle East where more than one state has nuclear weapons makes me very, very nervous. And of course, what this is all going to point to is the fact that America's interests and Israel's interests are going to continue to diverge. And the end result of that back here in the United States is that the lobby is going to have to work overtime to cover that up and make it look like everything is hunky-dory, when in fact it's not. And that has all sorts of negative consequences for domestic politics. So I think things are very bad now, but I'm sad to say they're only going to get worse.